Hey guys, the Premier Chels is sponsored by Kickoff Coffee. They are a top quality artisanal roasted coffee. In other words, they're Champions League winner and Premier League winner every single time. They deliver fresh bags directly to your home, so you don't have to go to a coffee shop and pick up something. And the best part about them is every bag gives back to soccer charities. 10% of the proceeds go to organizations that use soccer to promote youth social development in the underserved areas. Use our code TPCoffee15 to get 15% off your order. You can order at kickoffcoffeeco.com or check out the links on our social media. Thanks.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Premier Chels, your source for all things Premier League, but starting with Chelsea first. Coming to you on your speakers and headsets, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I'm one of your hosts, Jackie, and I'm with my two friends, Alex and Rahul. Guys, we just got off another episode that we're about to release with a great conversation that happened with Christina Uncle, former referee, works for CBS now, and a pretty good conversation overall. I know we're going to talk about Real Madrid. We're going to hold back some of our abuse for the referees, maybe, quote unquote, but Alex, your thoughts on that, and then we'll jump into the Real Madrid games.
Yeah, it was definitely a really interesting talk to hear. I think it gives us a little more perspective as fans, and I think it's always good knowing how the rules of the game are being enforced, how they're being looked at, how they're being changed, because inevitably, whenever a team loses, if it's the other team, their fans start flooding in with complaints, and if your team loses, you feel hard done by. So I think it's definitely good to have the perspective of how the decisions are made, how the officials are trying to improve things, and maybe give us that little bit more patience with the officials, with the knowledge that they're at the very least trying to keep the flow of the game, trying to keep the correct results, and ultimately trying to give a fair match. So very interesting conversation for sure, but doesn't ease the blow perhaps of our most recent performance.
And may not skip us from having some abuse for the referees today. But if you're tuning into this episode and you haven't had a chance to listen to the previous episode, pause right here, go back and listen. It's worth the listen, and then come back and hear the Real Madrid analysis. But Rahul, I'll bring you in. Let's talk about Real Madrid, my friend. You had some predictions. Alex had some predictions. I don't think anybody could predict how that game played out in the end, at the end of it.
To be fair, Alex did predict a 3-1 and said it would go to penalties, which unfortunately it didn't happen. And I got to put my hand up. I didn't put up the prediction because I was slightly embarrassed by my own prediction, which was a 2-2. And I didn't want to get abused. I was trying to protect myself. I didn't want to get abused by the fans because there was a lot of belief and a lot of positivity coming through. And rightly so, because the boys proved me wrong and proved you and Alex right that they would win away to Real Madrid. And so didn't happen the way we wanted it to at the end of the day. But I am nothing but proud of what the team put out. And yes, we're out of the competition. But that's, if you're going to go out, that's how you go out, not just get rolled over.
Yep. And I think belief is the key for this particular episode. Let's go through the starting 11. Alex, if you want to run us through the starting 11 really quickly for Chelsea, and then we go from there.
Yeah, I'm just trying to, I just want to pull it up real quick so that I make sure I have the correct lineup. But Chelsea lined up with Mendy in goal, which I think is never a surprise. And we had Marcus Alonso on the pitch. It was a back four, essentially replicating the formation that we'd I don't know if it was a full replication. Maybe you guys can fill me in a little there. But it was replicating for the most part the formation that we had in the second half, I think, against Real Madrid in the first leg that proved more effective, with Reece James at that right back role. So it was Alonso, Rudiger, Silva, and James in the back. You had Kovacic, Conte, Loftus-Cheek as our midfielders. That, I think, that Loftus-Cheek start is something I did not see coming last episode, but Tuchel, I think, surprised a lot of people with that. Then Mason Mount once again got to play in a little bit of a free floating role. And we'd said last game he was looking really, really good when he was given that space to sort of drift in behind a couple other attacking players. And he kept from the Southampton lineup. I believe it was actually, I don't know. Do you know how many changes? Was it only one change to the starting lineup versus Southampton, or one or two?
I don't remember the exact starting lineup for Southampton, but I think it was pretty spot on everybody that he picked out there, Alex.
I think it might have been like just Alonso was one inclusion or something, because we once again saw that Werner Havertz combination up top, with the German duo having been very good against Southampton, and then once again sort of unlocking Mount to roam a little bit in that more central kind of number 10/false 9 role. So it was a lineup that I think maybe not too many people would have predicted would come out again. But it certainly took Real Madrid all the way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you said it correctly. I don't think any of us were close to predicting this lineup, especially since they played against Southampton previously and we saw them perform so well, but some of the guys that would stay, and I'll call out Ruben Loftus-Cheek playing, and then maybe Timo Werner as well, who are not always Thomas Tuchel's first choice. But you hit a good point there, Alex, on the back four versus back three. And I think Ruben Loftus-Cheek played a very integral part in allowing a fluid formation. It was a back four at times where Reese would go out back and Alonso would tuck in. But at certain times when we would defend, it would become a back three and Ruben Loftus-Cheek would become right wing back. And so absolutely spot on with the tactics. Very interesting to look at it overall. Rahul, Timo Werner starts second game. Did you even see that coming?
I know I didn't. And I think we predicted that he wouldn't be one of the starters in the last step or the one before the last episode. And so it was a surprise, but I think he had earned the chance to play and perform and come out. And I think a lot of people had said when Mount, Timo and Kai play, we tend to create more chances just because Timo has the pace, Kai has the movement, and then Mount just kind of floats around and creates confusion. And so I think Thomas Tuchel saw that and used that to his advantage. And he was right. And I think those three are turning into our main attackers and threats. Obviously having the other guys on the bench that can always fill in. But I was surprised to see Timo, but not surprised by the fact that he was given a second start, especially since he did so well against Southampton.
Yeah, absolutely. Alex, we'll talk about the first goal, jump right into it. I don't know exactly if the stat is accurate, so I'm going to put that out there. But as I was listening to the game, the commentator said that there was 29 passes leading up to Mason Mount's goal. And to me, that's incredible because you had highlighted in the first leg, even though we lost the game, at times we outplayed Real Madrid. Does it get any better than stringing together 29 passes against a top-tier Real Madrid team at the Bernabeu and then Mount capping it off with a goal?
Yeah, I mean, that first half, I was, I know sometimes my parents tune into this episode, so I'll make sure to specify, it was not a normal class period. Technically, it was interfering with my art class, or I had a digital media class, but it was actually in my college's art museum. So I very quickly completed my assignment in the first 30 minutes of class so that I could then sit in a chair deeply studying the works of art, but also more specifically the game playing on my phone in the foreground. I watched, though, I thought it was some of the best I'd ever seen Chelsea play in recent memory. And it's kind of shocking to me that happened against Real Madrid at the Bernabeu. I think I said it during and after the first leg. I really was just hammering home. I thought that scoreline was deceptive. Yep. If you took away the Mendy shocker, which was, I mean, that does not happen usually. Even Mendy, who's not great with his feet, does not usually give away a goal that easily. If you take away that freak incident, it's a one goal game. And yet here are people talking as if Chelsea got brutally outplayed, as if the tie's dead. And I said, no. I saw us get more shots, more chances created, more expected goals, more passes, more possession against a Real Madrid side that actually kind of looked scared at times and was really sitting back in the box. Yeah. They just happened to have an extraordinarily lethal Benzema, who is, I think you could say probably without exaggeration, the best striker in the world at the moment, and just having an absolutely ridiculous season. So for me, I knew Chelsea were capable of outplaying Real Madrid. I said that. I had the never give up background in our prior episode. I was fully confident that Chelsea could go and get a win. And I just didn't think it would be quite the, it's a fortress. Real Madrid are going to come out and dominate at home. No, this was a Chelsea side playing without fear. They were coming off their Southampton win. And that first half was incredible. I was amazed to see us just dominate Real Madrid on their home patch. And I think we certainly could have had more goals, but we didn't even need it. And I loved the commentators were saying Chelsea need to not get desperate because they have 90 minutes to score these two goals to get back into it. And once we got that goal from Mount relatively early on, we didn't throw ourselves at them and leave ourselves exposed. It was a great combination of fluid attacking, of looking for openings, of our midfielders, of Conte, of Kovacic, recovering and breaking up those Real Madrid attacks so they couldn't even stay on the ball. It was just masterful.
Absolutely. And well said, Alex, but also well played with that art class over there. So I know that you focused on your studies, but you had the time to give to Chelsea. So I appreciate
accelerated studies. Yes.
Accelerated studies. We'll call it that going forward. Rahul, some people are calling this, I'm not going to say me, but I don't want to take credit for it alone. Total Tuchel football. Is this probably the best we've played, at least in that first half with Thomas Tuchel?
Absolutely. We made Real Madrid look like Real Madrid B. Like, I don't even know. They didn't look like the first team. And we handled their attacking threats. In the first leg, Vinicius Jr. It's Vinicius Jr. was just getting space constantly in behind Christensen. Reece James was on the right wing back and he wasn't getting back enough. So this game, Reece James played in that right center back, right back, whatever you want to call it. And Vinicius was struggling and Benzema, who kind of floats in between the lines with the fluid formation, he was struggling to find spaces, and we made them look like an amateur side. And I'm sure people will say, well, they still beat you. Yes, they did, but for 80 minutes we were by far the better team, and even in the second half of the first, like, we were the better team. So it really came down to the first 45 minutes of this of this game, or this tie, where we kind of lost it. But coming back to the Mason Mount goal, like you said, it surprised me, and I'm sure it surprised Real Madrid, because we were just knocking it around. It didn't seem like we had the intent to score a goal there, but out of nothing, boom, there was two passes and Mason Mount put the ball in the net. And I think that's where you're saying total Tuchel football. Alex is saying, that's kind of what our plan was. We'll control it and look for these openings. And when these openings came, we capitalized. And that's key to save, because in the past, we've let these openings slide like we did later on in this game. And I'm sure we'll get there. But to go in 1-0 at the half, I think we were all excited and happy. And that first goal had to come for Chelsea, and it did.
Yep, absolutely. Alex, I want to talk about Ruben Loftus-Cheek a little bit. We mentioned him earlier on when we were talking about the starting 11. He wasn't necessarily a player, this is just my opinion, that I thought was going to play a huge part, specifically towards the end of the season. I know he's a quality player. We've seen him under Maurizio Sarri, where he contributes a lot. But with the midfield we have of Kovacic, Kante, Jorginho, Saul, Mason Mount, you almost wondered if Ruben Loftus-Cheek would be secondary, not necessarily the primary player in this massive, massive fixture. But he found a way through Tuchel's heart. He found a way into that right central midfield position, right wing back, whatever you want to call it. I thought he had a good game. I thought he was a very strong presence. Something that I think, Alex, you talked about in the last review of this was we need some physicality. And then I think he stood up to that. I don't know what your thoughts on Ruben are.
Yeah, we've always known, I think, one of Ruben's best attributes is that he's a rare combination of quick with his feet and very strong on the ball. You see that maybe in a similar-ish sense, actually, with Reece James, who's pretty fast, has good ball control, but also is muscular enough to hold off attackers, combining some very good traits there. But even to a greater degree, Loftus-Cheek really does have, we know he's got some dribbling in him. Yeah. Now, unfortunately, he's had some tough setbacks. He's had some tough periods, very tough injuries that I think we all saw live. Yeah. His most recent major injury. And, you know, we certainly haven't seen that kind of version of Loftus-Cheek, who was carrying us through that Europa League season and tearing it up, looking really good under Sarri. We maybe haven't seen that back, but I think what some Chelsea fans get wrong when they say, oh, this player isn't Chelsea quality, this player isn't Chelsea quality, sell every single player, they're all dead wood. I think fans have to realize that depth is crucial. And we know that now more than ever, having seen how two injuries to two key players, our two wingbacks at the beginning of the season, essentially derailed our season. And yet we still managed to work through with some good other players stepping up and Tuchel really putting in a shift. But depth is key. And Loftus-Cheek, for me, if he's a player who's happy to not accept a starting role at Chelsea, he is absolutely the kind of player that, I mean, I don't think there are many managers in the world who would turn down a player of his profile with just physicality, work rate, some attacking threat, some defensive responsibility. He's just a very well-rounded kind of figure, almost in that sense reminding me of Saul, though I think he's a little higher quality personally than Saul, at least in terms of adaptation to the English game, in that he can just kind of be a stopgap. He can come into midfield, you can use him as a defensive piece, and I agree with you. I think he was impressive, and I think people need to give these maybe fringe players a little more credit, because as we've seen, it takes an injury or two or a poor game or two, and suddenly those starters who you thought were perfect, making your ideal 11, aren't available, and you're left to look at the bench and say, I sure hope we have someone who can step up here.
And he is, Rahul. I mean, he's come in at a time where we needed him most. Alex has hinted that he's played multiple positions for Tuchel this season. And I hate to make this comparison, but it's what popped into my head. Michael Essien-ish, playing multiple positions, the physicality, the running with the ball, maybe high praise, but maybe worth it.
No, when Alex was saying that, Michael Essien is who came to my mind. It is high praise. And for anyone listening, we're not saying Ruben is Michael.
Right.
I think his ability to turn into a utility player in these various positions is what we're comparing him to. And you've seen over the last two games, he brings something extra to that wing back position. And not saying Reese doesn't, but when we need to use Reese deeper to counteract pace or physicality, having Ruben Loftus-Cheek driving up and down that right wing isn't a bad option. Yeah. He has, you guys have said it, he has the physicality, he has some pace to him too. And even if he's just holding it up and allowing someone else to make the run or bring them in, I think it's a good option, and I wouldn't sell him. I wouldn't, unless we randomly bring in like all these players that fit exactly the role. I think he has a spot in this squad, and he can come in and do a job in multiple positions. And that's what you want to expect from him. I'm sure he would love to be the starter, but with that injury, with the season away at Fulham last year, he's come back and he's playing in the Champions League quarterfinal at the Santiago Bernabeu, which isn't a bad thing to be doing. And he gave it his all. So that's all you ask for from the boys. And these boys that come through our academy are always going to give their all.
Absolutely. And I think you guys have hit the nail on the head. He may not be a starter. He's willing to put up in different positions. But at the end of the day, if he continues to play the way he's playing, he's going to force Tuchel to find a position for him on the field. And that's all he can do. That's all he can do, guys. But we go in 1-0 up in that first half. Second half, I don't know what you guys were feeling, so I'll turn it back to you, Alex. You expect Madrid to come back out, or do you expect more of the same from Chelsea?
I mean, certainly I was hoping Chelsea. I mean, that's one of those times you almost hope halftime doesn't come because you're playing so well. The last thing we need is a chance for Real Madrid to regroup here. I mean, if we could have just played straight through the 90 minutes and not even given them a break, I would have said go for it, because we were running them off the pitch. And then when the second half starts, and I think it was as I forget which one of you said it, we really did dominate this game for the better part of 80 minutes. I mean, right up until that last little error on our part, it was a dominant performance against a team that I think the fans and the team itself tends to maybe puff itself up a little bit on reputation. Now, still obviously some outrageous quality in there in individual players, but I think what we saw over these two legs is that Chelsea as a unit are better than Real Madrid as a unit. Now, unfortunately, Chelsea didn't have what I would say is a top three player in the world at the moment in Benzema. And we just, I mean, the guy scored four goals against us over two legs. So I was sort of seeing this as, you know what, we are still fully in this. we are dominating this game. And then when we start that second half and Antonio Rudiger comes in and he off a corner that you know, you could say whatever you want to say. whatever. I think it evened out some other refereeing decisions in that match. I think that was just a crazy moment because Antonio Rudiger comes in and we actually, for once in our lives, I felt like, started a half, the second half, the same way we finished the first half, because I feel like so many times we've seen Chelsea with high intensity and then you take a little break or the game lulls for a bit and they drop off. But this was, I mean, you guys have said, I really can't speak highly enough of the work that they put in. It was all hands on deck, everyone believing, everyone pushing for the goals, and we got it, which was crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not going to talk about the corner. I think that's something we're going to brush over, but I do want to talk about Rudiger, Rahul. It was said on the game time, if Real Madrid are watching, Rudiger is putting up an audition for a move to Real Madrid. I don't think the way he played, he wants a move to Real Madrid. I think he put the Chelsea shirt on. He wore his Chelsea heart on his sleeve. He went into every tackle with full strength. That audition was for the new owners of Chelsea to give him the contract that he wants, right?
Absolutely. That man was on a mission, and his mission was, we're going to the semifinals. And you can see at the end when I think Alaba, someone is coming to console him, he's like, get away from me. I was about to use some colorful language. But no, it wasn't that, like you guys are talking about the corner. Yes, that corner wasn't a corner, but there were other instances where we did have corners and we got to the end of them and it just didn't go in. So we were kind of threatening from the corner. And it's funny, before the game, I was thinking to myself, it's been a while since some of our defenders scored from a corner. And here we go. We get that. And the goal comes early enough in that second half where you're like, hold on a minute, something's about to happen here. Something special is working on. And you asked the question, did we expect Real Madrid to come out a little bit stronger or a little bit more intense in the second half? And I certainly did. That first half, I was watching them. They were mostly in their own half. You're looking around, you're like, we're at their own stadium. And they really can't get out of their own half. Second half, it's going to be better. Carlo Ancelotti is going to make a sub. They don't want this to continue into the second half. And we hit them with the second goal. And all of a sudden they're like, hold on, Chelsea are really about to do this. And that goal comes at the right time, because then we start believing. Tuchel's getting fully behind the boys, not that he wasn't anyway. And the boys themselves are saying, we're putting in the effort and we're seeing the results of it, which is the goals. And I think Alex made a key point where we've made memes out of second half, we come forward and we focus down. This game, we were focused right from the beginning, yep. Maybe right until the end where we dropped a little bit. But, man, Rudiger was not only the goal, but everything else on the pitch. The tackles, the last ditch, like efforts, fouls. And he did something very key was, I think it was in the first half, midway through the first half, he went in for a tackle on Benzema. He didn't get the ball, but he dropped a little shoulder on him. And he got in Benzema's head. And we consider a corner, and Benzema came up to him and they like had a little moment, but he was doing the little bit of his dark arts that he does usually. And I think he was channeling his inner Atletico Madrid. But Rudiger, man, if we can keep one player out of the squad, and I know we'd love to keep Aspi, I think Rudy would be the man.
I mean, that's high praise, because Azpilicueta has been a long servant here and, you know, he's won everything with Chelsea, but I think, I don't want to say I agree with you because Azpilicueta is huge, but I think if anybody can stay, he's definitely a huge name up there that needs to be honored and stay for the next phase of the ownership and potentially build on that with that, because a lot of passion was shown there. But, you know, we go on from there, guys. We're 2-0 up. At this point, it's going to be an exciting game. I'm wondering where we go next. Do we want to talk about the Marcus Alonso handball? I think we've covered it enough in the previous episode. Maybe Alex, a one-liner on it.
Yeah, it was, I mean, it was a great finish from Alonso. That was really, we were piling on the pressure. I mean, it was kind of crazy how we just kept pushing and pushing, and it felt like every player expected us to get that third goal and go ahead on aggregate. And sure enough, I mean, when you play with that belief and that quality, the goal came. Now, as we've said, and I think I wasn't even I was more upset that the goal was disallowed just because I thought it was unlucky rather than saying, oh, blatantly wrong decision by the ref. Right. I mean, it hit his hand and there was an angle, I think, from the front of him that showed pretty clearly that the first angle I saw, I said, I don't know. And then there was an angle from the front that I said, yeah, okay, the ball definitely would have continued popping up in the air if his hand hadn't kept it down a little bit. Certainly not intentional, very natural position, as we've just heard from the referee. And as I think I pretty much accepted, it was the right call, totally an annoying call. Unfortunate, obviously the handball rule is one that's a little tough because it's been changed multiple times in the past few years. So the inconsistencies and the going against you at a crucial time, maybe in a game where other decisions have gone against you. I know I was more worried about that, a no call on a, I thought was a decent penalty shout for Kai Havertz, where Casemiro just came across him nowhere near the ball and locked knees with him. I thought, I mean, that one, maybe 50-50, give it 40-60 if I'm being generous. Penalty call, that one I was more concerned about than the handball because, frankly, I saw that and I said, you know what? I still think we have it in us because we're playing with that belief and I think we can go get another one.
And that we did, guys. After that, we find a way. Rahul, the man's not got a lot of goals this season. He's not got a lot of love this season. He's not been our first choice, sometimes not our second choice, sometimes not our third choice striker. But Timo Werner comes in clutch when called upon. And honestly, I think this little drop of the shoulder and shimmying the ball across, you said it best when we were messaging back and forth. How would you describe that moment he made for himself?
I forget what I said, but I know what I put up on our Instagram, which was a picture that looked like prime Ronaldo. And I mean the Brazilian Ronaldo. But it was uncharacteristic of Timo Werner to do that, because from what we've seen over the last few months, certainly up until the Southampton game, is he rushes it. He takes it too early. He doesn't fake it. He doesn't do anything to maybe throw the defender off. But for some reason in this game, everything that we had seen in Leipzig and in Timo Werner came through at Chelsea, and he drops, I think it was Casemiro, Alaba, maybe Nacho, and then the snake. Oh, I mean, sorry, Thibaut Courtois. And after canceling out, or rightfully so, not getting the Alonso goal, I think there were some doubts in the sense that, can we go and get this third goal? But we never gave up, and the goal comes through. And I think Timo even picks up an injury a little bit trying to get the ball into the net, but it goes in. And right at that moment, you saw a team huddle come together. Usually everyone celebrates, goes crazy. A team huddle came together. And I think the message was, we can't let this go now. We've done the hard work. We've gotten this far. We can't let this go. And I, at that point, honestly, I was like, you know what? The guys are so focused, like this, we're making it to the next round. But credit to Timo, credit to the boys. I think everyone put their heart out there, and Timo especially. I know he went off, and maybe due to the injury, maybe not, but from the Southampton game to continue into this game and give us that moment and give himself that moment could be a turning point for himself.
Yeah, I don't know how you guys felt. You know, when I watched the Southampton game, it was a steamroll, and it was kind of, well, you know, we want to win this game. It's so easy. It's going to happen. And so I don't want to say it this way, but the passion in me was kind of limited. It was just watching the game and getting, oh, it's a goal. It's a goal. It's a goal. Every single goal for this game, I felt like my mind exploded. I was on a different planet with excitement. But when that third goal goes in, the theme I said at the beginning was believe. The belief was so high at this point that I get chills, my fingers get cold, because your belief now goes from, holy smokes, we're going to take this all the way, to there are 10 minutes left. What can happen in 10 minutes? And that can get dangerous. So I'll pause. Alex, I know you were at a gallery or an art gallery. How did you handle your emotions through this three goals coming back and forth at Madrid, by the way?
Yeah, I mean, the second half, actually, luckily I was out of class for the second half, so I was able to watch it without the distraction of higher education. I will say to echo that Werner point, I think literally right after in our pod breaking down the Southampton game, I said, I've always wanted to see him take more fake shots, because we saw him take a really nice one and then go off the post and Kai Havertz tapped it in. And I said, yep, he was unlucky not to get that goal, but that just shows the goals will come for him if he can just be that little bit trickier and a little bit less of a one-dimensional player where he makes the run and shoots the ball. Now he's making the run and defenders have to think, is he going to shoot it? Is he going to try something? I mean, it just adds that extra bit of trickery. And then right again, I think that gave him some confidence. He saw, okay, you know what? A cheeky little fake shot opened up some great space against Southampton, opened up some great space against Madrid too. This time he gets that little bit of extra luck. The ball finds its way in. The belief was there. It was fully, fully, fully exciting. And I did believe in this. As I said, even in the first leg, I mean, I saw Benzema tearing our defense to shreds just with error after error. And I still said, we are the better team here. I know we have the quality to beat this team if we can keep them quiet offensively. And yeah, unfortunately, I have to say, Rahul, your exact wording reminded me chillingly of Steven Gerrard's speech of this does not slip, which, you know, I guess the good news is these players have won a Champions League and Gerrard was not so lucky as the trophy that slipped from his grasp. But yeah, unfortunately, we did pull a Gerrard in the end.
We did indeed. Rahul, I'll bring it to you because you heaped a lot of praise on Luka Modric in that first leg. And one way or the other, he finds a miracle ball or a magical pass. And Ancelotti brought the right player on at the right time, but I don't think it's the player he brought on. I think it's the vision and the foresight of Modric to just say, there's a run, no one's watching, let me pick this guy. But let me not just pick him, let me put it on such a silver platter that this guy just has to touch it with his big toenail and it's going to go in. So I'll pass it to you for a second and talk about Modric.
I don't know what to say, man. And that really came from a mistake that we made. I think, and you said it over text, was Conte's trying to be too cute over here because he's trying to dink it over, I think, on the right flank, on the right wing, and it falls to another Madrid player who gives it to Modric. And without thinking, this man just out of his right boot puts a ball over our defense into the box for Rodrigo. And of all the times for that man to score too, he scores there. And it was a goal, but I think you just have to sit back and say that ball probably won't see it ever again in this season, maybe not even next season, but
and then that ball is game.
Yeah. And that ball at that point at the 80th minute, when they desperately needed a goal, he could have easily been like, you know what? I'm going to lay it off to Benzema or give it to someone, Vinicius Junior on the right wing. He does the unthinkable and they score. And I think for the 5 minutes that we're not going to let this slip. I think one little mistake or one little error or lapse in concentration could have booted the ball out. Like you always say, if you're in doubt, just kick it out. Yep. Cost us the belief in the sense that Real Madrid now started feeling we just need one more here and we can make it through. So, but you got to give credit to Modric. I think Jamie Carragher described it as the pass of the decade. You can't really argue against that. And there's not that many players in the game that can do that. And I think Modric is what, 36, 37? Something and to like do that in the 80th minute of a Champions League game that you're losing at home, you desperately need a goal, hats off to him.
And, you know, I think the way I describe it, this is my personal opinion, is when something like that happens, a team can get deflated. What I saw happen was we popped. We immediately popped because all of the belief that we've said for this entire episode and what we had and what Chelsea and the players had magically just evaporated. And it's sad to say that because I thought, okay, we're going to go into extra time and we can build off of that. But we really didn't look the same after that. And Alex, why were we not able to come back into the game after that? What changed? Was it just losing belief or did Madrid gain that belief that we lost?
I mean, certainly you have to say that sort of woke up Madrid and they grew into the game very late, but they did grow into it and suddenly start looking like the type of Real Madrid side you say they're a force to be reckoned with. They're playing at the Bernabeu. It's almost as if both teams suddenly woke up from that little dream of Chelsea just playing them off the pitch. And both teams remembered this is Real Madrid at the Bernabeu with ultimate quality in the form of Modric, Benzema. Even if they're not at their very strongest as a team, these are players who can make something happen. And in my opinion, I think the timing of the Madrid goals,
I believe that's true.
In terms of their the actual way they were scored was just unlucky for us, because I fully agree that you look at that world-class pass. I mean, just mind-boggling. I couldn't even be mad at that if I tried. It was a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant pass. I am always a lover of the beautiful game, and I had to look back and admire and say that is gorgeous. What an assist. Perfect finish, of course. I mean, I think that is one goal I could not have been mad about conceding at any time over the two legs. And what I think is tough is that at that point, as you said, we had that belief. We'd come back from what the pundits were saying was impossible, from what all the rival fans were saying was impossible, from what Tuchel tried to downplay in the media and say, don't worry about it. The tie's dead as far as we're concerned, which I think personally was a smart choice to keep the players as yep. mentally the underdogs. Over the course of two legs, we could have conceded that goal and I wouldn't have been mad. But right there, it took that moment of brilliance to break the sort of confidence and the flow and the form of our play, versus I don't think we would have made those simple errors that led to the three Madrid goals in the first leg at that point, because we were playing so nicely. We were playing with belief. I don't think Mendy would have slipped up and given Benzema the ball. I don't think we would have left Vinicius roam down the left and make those crosses. I think we conceded the easy goals when our mentality was weak. And then when our mentality was strong, Madrid came out and scored a world-class goal that, you know what, as much as a team can try, you can't always stop brilliance. And that's what happened. But it's just really unfortunate, because we were playing really well. And I feel like we had the fortitude to not concede any dumb goals. But then that one goes in and you have to say, yeah, okay, we made errors, but very few players in the world ever turn that into a one pass, one finish. I mean, that was absurd. So,
and that's really what it comes down to, was the quality in that moment was undeniable. And I do agree with you guys to some extent. I think this game overall was lost because of the mistakes made in the first leg, and that's what ultimately cost us the tie. But 90 minutes are up. You know, we're going into extra time. Rahul, usually Alex comes prepared with the expected goals, but I think you've got some expected goals for us today.
Yeah, no, that was a stat I was going to share once we'd finished the analysis. But over the two legs, Chelsea had an expected goal. I think it was 4.7 or something. I just rounded up to 5. And Real Madrid had an expected goals of 2. So that tells you we scored our 5 goals over the two legs, but we conceded way more than Real Madrid had the potential to score. And it comes back to what Alex was saying, is the mistakes and basically just giving the world-class players they have the opportunities to put in balls and give Benzema. Benzema scores 4 out of the 5 goals they scored in this tie, which is, you can't allow players of that caliber and that ability to finish with that much chances. But I think coming just briefly on the belief part, I think we had so much belief and we had put so much effort in that when they scored, I think mentally we were a little like shot, we were drained. And you see that in the subs we made. I think Timo Werner obviously was tired, but we eventually ended up subbing 3 of the 4 guys that played in midfield with Loftus-Cheek, Conte and Kovacic, because those guys were shot. They had put in so much effort and energy. And we bring in guys from the bench that maybe because they didn't start the game, weren't in that kind of frame or energy wise, they were just not in that at that level yet. And Madrid were, and we see what happens. Another mistake in extra time, which leads to Vinicius getting more space because Reece is out of position and he puts in a cross. Again, Benzema makes a good run, pauses, allows the defense to leave him and go ahead of him, and the ball comes in and he scores. Personally, I think Mendy could have done a little bit better, but can't really be too critical of him at that point.
Yeah, and that ends the game, guys. I mean, realistically, after that, we tried. And honestly, I think that's where credit is due. We never gave up. I think we kept trying and kept trying and kept trying. Had several chances, lots of missed chances as well. I wouldn't say a lot of them were very easy chances by any means, but critical chances that if any one of the players had put them away, this could be a whole different conversation. We'd be smiling, laughing a lot more. But I don't want to dwell on the missed chances. I think you guys have done an amazing job of praising the team, talking about the belief that they have. I think that we can take this and hopefully move on from here. But I want to talk about one man, Thomas Tuchel. He got a lot of flack for that first leg performance. Rahul, some people crazily asking for him to be fired. Alex, I know you're seeing some crazy things on Twitter as well. I thought he got every single piece of his tactics spot on, especially with the shape, with the personnel he picked. Alex, I think whatever he did in the changing room, building up to the game, halftime, to keep them mentally focused. What can you say? What more can you praise Thomas Tuchel?
Thomas Tuchel is the best coach in the world. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to say that right now, because I think I'm sure, the Liverpool fans are probably, Rahul gets to deal with them in the DMs already. Manchester City fans are flocking to send you a hate message right now. Thomas Tuchel is the best coach in the world. And I think when you think about what he's dealt with this season, I mean, even just entirely in coming in from a Chelsea squad that had been turbulent, had a club legend sacked, was lacking some direction, the signings weren't getting any cohesion, you had COVID that you were dealing with, you were dealing with empty stadiums, then you come and you get to deal with the Lukaku drama and the interview, you get to deal with two injuries to your arguably two most important players right at the beginning, or well, towards the beginning of the season, just super unlucky. Tuchel's had his own personal issues going on throughout this. You then have Chelsea getting sanctioned because apparently we invaded Russia, or rather we invaded Ukraine. Chelsea are Russia, to clarify, in the eyes of the British government. And Tuchel has dealt with all of this and yet consistently just kept this squad performing to the point that we are almost, and not quite there, because you know what? Those little bits of luck weren't going our way. We weren't getting lucky in some of these games. We had some tough decisions. We had some tough injuries, but I won't say we're going to win the league, but we are not like absurdly far off the top of the table. This is not an embarrassment of a season in the Premier League. We came extraordinarily close, should have, in my opinion, gone through in the Champions League to the semifinals. And we're now going into the semifinals of the FA Cup. This is a man who has coached us brilliantly, and every bit of his performance, I mean, talking to the media, I literally don't think we deserve this guy, because he came out to the media and he said, this tie, they said, is there a chance in the second leg of the Real Madrid tie? And he said, no, there's not. It's done. If we forget about that, we're going to get hammered at Southampton if we keep playing like this. And all the noodle-brained Chelsea fans who have nothing better to do in their life but go on social media and complain about a man who is the best coach we could possibly ask for, we're going and saying, oh, that's bad. He's not showing belief in the squad. You know, this is a really negative attitude. No. He plays the media like a fiddle. It's perfect. He doesn't give them the stupid sound bites they want. He keeps the players motivated. He keeps them focused. He says, forget the next leg. We have a game before this. Focus on this, because if we don't win in Southampton, we're not going in the right mindset to even have a chance in Madrid. And he keeps Chelsea as the underdogs in the narrative. We always know we play better when there aren't massive expectations and people say, oh, we're writing Chelsea off. I mean, Thomas Tuchel is masterful in the tactics, in the media, in his grace, his poise, his handling of everything. I could go on for years, as I already have, because he's, in my opinion, I don't know. Here's my hot take. My hot take of the week. He's the best coach Chelsea Football Club have ever had in terms of actual all around ability, personality, demeanor. I think he has everything. And I think it's unlucky that he's been in a turbulent time at this club, but I think if we back him, he will pull us through this and show us immense success.
It's hard to argue with you, Alex. And I think the key thing here too is he's only had one signing. And I know people think, you know, Chelsea had a great squad before he came in, but the squad was built with another person's vision and they have a specific way of playing. But what he did was look at the people that are there and say, they fit this formation. You know, Ruben Loftus-Cheek is not fitting in here, but he can play center back. He can play right back. Okay, I'm struggling. Frank Lampard, iced out Marcus Alonso. He's a veteran that will get me goals. I'm going to bring him back in. Jorginho didn't play a single minute under Frank Lampard. lots of complaints about Jorginho, went on to become a European superstar and place top three in the world. You can go on and on about he didn't pick this squad. Yes, he added Lukaku, but it's a whole different set of drama there. But he's made the people that he has work. He's still kept, by the way, some of the youth players that we thought, oh, that was just Frank Lampard picking them. No, he's integrated them and made them vital cogs to this wheel. He brought through Chaloba as well, and I'm hearing more about the players that are on loan now. They may come back, Conor Gallagher specifically, and have a big part to play. It's very well said from you, Alex. I find it very hard to argue. I think, imagine if Chelsea get a new owner and if he gets a couple of transfer windows and if he's back to build the team the way he wants, this could be a dangerous Chelsea team coming for the future. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but Raul, I'll give it to you for a second here.
I don't know what more to say. You two have covered it brilliantly. And I echo your sentiments and your thoughts. I think for the new owners, as much as it's important to buy and kind of close out this whole process with buying the club, it's equally important to have a conversation with Tuchel as soon as they know they may be the ones buying the club, that we're going to back you. Whatever you need, whatever you want on the pitch, we're going to back you. And you mentioned Lukaku. I would argue that may not have even been his signing. That may have been a club signing. And so technically he's come in and been here for two transfer windows and going into a third one this summer and has bought no players. And a lot of teams around the world or in the Premier League would say, give the manager time, give the manager players. He's already won us the Champions League. He's won us the Super Cup. He's won us the Club World Cup. We've been to a Carabao Cup final. We've been in the FA Cup final. We went to a Champions League quarterfinal again. We're in the FA Cup semifinal. Like, this is all with players that aren't his. So he's a special guy. And I think Alex has given me a soundbite for social media with him being the best for Chelsea, which is, you can't really argue against it. And once we add a Premier League trophy, I think he's definitely going to be up there.
Absolutely. Guys, I think the theme was the belief. I still believe that we played an amazing game. I still think that this is something we all need to be proud of. I know both of you guys are immensely proud with the comments you've had, not only about Tuchel, but each of the players. But not much more we can say about the Champions League. We live to move on and fight another day. Hopefully next season we can go through another long run. It's taking me back to the days of Chelsea early, where we were going to the final stages of these major competitions. So let's transition into another final stage of a major competition you guys have both alluded at. That's the FA Cup, and we're playing Crystal Palace in the semifinals. Alex, excited to play Crystal Palace?
I think so. I think especially after a tough cameo coming off cold from the bench, 83rd minute from Pulisic, and he wasn't able to convert a couple chances, I think it's time for him to assert his ownership of Crystal Palace once again. I think Christian Palace is due for its annual beating at the hands of Captain America. So I think this is going to be good. I think this hopefully, and obviously you got to say, well, these players are going to be disappointed after all that happened. But let's be honest. We just to read off a couple more quick stats, 57% possession to Madrid's 43 over two legs, 49 shots to their 18, 15 corners to their three. You can try to twist it however you want. We dominated Real Madrid over two legs and couldn't get through off of bad luck and poor finishing. I hope they channel that anger and say, you know what? We just frankly slapped Real Madrid at home, came away with the win, but lost on aggregate. Let's take this out on an unlucky Crystal Palace. hopefully are playing us at a bad time, which is kind of like, I'm imagining it's like, this is like if you couldn't successfully beat up the guy you didn't like, so you go for the younger brother. That's what I'm hoping it's like. So hopefully Chelsea says, you know what, Crystal Palace, you're the closest thing to me right now. I'll come here for a sucker punch and we get a Pulisic bicycle kick hat trick.
Rahul, he wants to beat Crystal Palace so badly, and it's unlucky for them. But another thing that we need to talk about is Conor Gallagher can't play for them. Is that unlucky, unfair thoughts on this one?
Look, I've heard a lot from rival fans on their opinions about this. And yes, I understand the sentiment that he's gotten them to this point. He's been a key figure for them. He was key figure in beating Arsenal the other week. But those are the loans, the rule of the loan, right? You loan a player, you know that he can't play against a parent club, at least in the Premier League and in the domestic competitions. And so they asked, Chelsea said no. Obviously, Chelsea want to have the best opportunity to make it to the next round. And they realized Conor Gallagher presents Crystal Palace with a good chance of defeating them. So
right.
So no, he's not gonna play. Is it fair when I put myself in Gallagher's spot? I say no, it's not fair, because what if Crystal Palace achieved this great win over Chelsea in the semifinal and make it to the final? Well, you can play the final. And for those that say, what if he never gets to play a semifinal again? Well, he's done enough to work his way into Tuchel's plans for next season. And he's young enough, and of course a career could end at any point, but he's young enough that he can make it back to the stage again. And this should make him hungrier to make it back to the stage with Chelsea, not just with Crystal Palace. So my view is I agree those are the rules of the loan. And it's unfair, yes, but we want to look out for ourselves, and Conor Gallagher is welcome back next season and can take us back to the heights of not only an FA Cup, but a Champions League semi-final and a final, because that's where Chelsea belongs. So those are my thoughts on it. And I'm sure Alex will banter the rival fans and especially Arsenal fans, but nothing really. That's how loans work. And I'm sure if this was one of Arsenal's players and they were playing them, they would have said no. United's players, they would have said no. So that's just what the big clubs do. They got to protect themselves.
Absolutely. Let me run some key things for you guys, and then Alex will ask you for a predicted 11 from your perspective. But Chelsea have won each of their last 9 fixtures with Crystal Palace. So it's a tie that we like to win. I don't want to jinx ourselves over here, but something that we've done. Chelsea have lost each of their last 2 FA Cup London derbies, both coming against Arsenal in the 2017 and 2020 finals. So interesting statements there. We can banter Arsenal all we want, but here's some information that they can be proud of as well. And Chelsea are set to appear in our 26th, that's right, 2-6 FA Cup semi-final. So we've been there, done that. We continue to do this on a grand stage. So Rahul, like you said about Conor Gallagher, there's going to be multiple opportunities should he come back here. But Alex, let's talk about a starting 11. You keeping Mendy, you're going to put Kepa in goal for this match?
I think probably Kepa should get a shot. I think Mendy, I don't think he's been, I mean, he hasn't been shocking. He made that poor error in the first leg of the Champions League, whatever. But then aside from that, I think he was solid. It wasn't his very best, but he made some good saves. He made a couple of good stops. And I think, though, it's Kepa deserves a place. Kepa really has done very well for us under Tuchel so far. He's had some very good performances, had unfortunately some penalty misfortunes, but at the end of the day, sort of like blaming this past tie on players missing chances, there are a lot of things that could have gone differently. I don't think you can blame that penalty miss on a goalkeeper who's, you know, whatever. So I think I want to see Kepa back in goal, and I think I want to see us rotate a little bit.
Okay.
But not too much. So certainly I would put Chalobah in. Christensen, if he's available, I think would be good. Just keep the squad fresh, because we do have more games coming. But I think we can put out a very strong lineup still, and one capable of taking on Palace. And obviously my one fixture in the team has to be Pulisic, because I think he's going to need to get those misses out of his head against Madrid. I mean, I saw people describing them as sitters. I won't go into them again. How noodle-brained some Chelsea fans are. You know, whatever. Passion blinds us all at some points. But I think he'll want to put that out of his mind. And we know he can perform. We know he can perform against Palace. And we also want fresh attackers, because some of the ones out there were kind of run ragged for all the work they put in Madrid. So I certainly would say Pulisic, who only came on in the 83rd minute, even though he did go through extra time, should probably start.
Okay. Rahul, let's plug in some of the other open positions. So he's gone with Chalobah, Christensen. Do you bring Thiago in that group, or do you stick with Antonio Rudiger, who's been a stalwart at that left center back position?
I would play Rudiger. Yeah, I think his mission continues in this game. and he wants us to make it to a final again. So I think I would play Rudiger. Thiago, like we've said, played 120 minutes.
Yeah.
Could that be? I mean, the man recovers.
Needs like a break. Yeah.
He's 17, but Could he use the break? Certainly, especially since we've got Arsenal coming on Wednesday night. So maybe we start with Christensen, but of course we don't want to disrespect the opposition in the competition. So if Thiago is fit and Tuchel wants to play him, I'd certainly be okay with that. And then I think in midfield, I think Reece plays that right wing back position if we're going with the back three. I think Georgie and Kovacic come in mainly more because of, like we said, I think Conte was shattered at the end of that game and he hasn't looked himself. I don't think we spoke much about it in the Madrid game, but Conte just doesn't look at 100%. And so maybe towards the end of the season to get him back there, we not give him the start here. I think Alonso continues. The man is in goal scoring form, even though he missed out on a goal in Madrid. And then I think in the front two, like Alex was saying, with just the rotation and freshness, I think Ziyech and Timo Werner. But I wouldn't be surprised to see Kai Havertz come in. And if Lukaku is fit, maybe he starts too. But I think that would be my front three.
Okay, Alex, score prediction from you today?
Probably. I mean, man, I...
I heard a hat trick of bicycle kicks.
No, I think my ideal score prediction would involve a lot of really impressive goals. I think, I don't know, you guys must have seen Rudiger after some of those tackles he was making in Madrid. Yeah. He was actually playing like a man possessed. It was unreal. And I could see if he comes with a chip on his shoulder to this game, I could see him saying, let's up my 40-yard screamer to a 50. Wow. But no, it was a 30-yard screamer. Let's up it to a 40-yard screamer, whatever it was. I want to see him popping shots from distance. I don't know. Chelsea win, obviously, because if we don't, I'm going to cry. And then 3-0 is my prediction.
All right. Hopefully those are three bicycle kicks from Christian Pulisic going through. Raul, what about you, sir?
Oh, man. You mentioned we've lost our last two FA Cup London derbies. I would say that's mainly down to Anthony Taylor. I know we've done a whole episode with referees, but Anthony Taylor is one that I, no matter how much insight I have in the refereeing world, I can't get past. So for the Anthony Taylor tax, I think I would give Crystal Palace 1.
Okay.
And hopefully he doesn't send anybody off on our side and we win it 3-1.
Well done. Another win for us. I'm going to go for a 2-1, keeping it a little bit tight because I think Crystal Palace are going to be up for this one. But at the end of the day, we're all going for a win, and hopefully that's what happens. Before we wrap up, guys, let's talk about a couple more games, namely the other key fixtures going on. City versus Liverpool. Rahul, thoughts on that one?
I think Liverpool, because City had to go away. They had a pretty hot tie in Madrid. Although they couldn't score, let alone score 3 like some London teams. But I think Liverpool, I think that was Alex level banter right there.
Yeah, I know.
I think Liverpool can win this and
scoreline,
set up a rematch with Chelsea in the final. 3-2 to Liverpool.
Wow, so high scoring. Alex, what about you on this game?
Oh, I think probably, I don't know. I think Liverpool could take it. But I actually, you know what? I'm going to go with.
I guess who would you rather face in the final, right?
That's what I'm trying to think. Yeah. There's no. I mean, in a weird way, I don't even care because I feel like Tuchel has shown us that he can perform against. I mean, he bossed Pep the first 3 times he played him. Then City got the leg up on us a couple times after that. But I think. Tuchel has shown that he can go toe-to-toe with either of these managers. Our squad has shown we can go toe-to-toe with either of those squads. It'll be a good game either way. Maybe Man City edge it just due to the depth of their quality. I think Liverpool, I was talking to my friend who supports Liverpool earlier, and he agreed as well that they've maybe been riding a little bit of luck given that Salah hasn't been in great form, Mane hasn't been in goal-scoring form. Luckily, they've had Luis Diaz really stepping up for them at a crucial time. But I think City have a little bit more of that just sort of consistent depth and quality delivering. So maybe they go through.
Yeah, I think I'll have to echo what Alex is saying. I'm going to go for a City 1-0. Not that it really matters. I think what he said is accurate. If we make it past Crystal Palace, for me, we should be
able to keep up with whichever opposition show up at that point in time. So fun games either way. And before we wrap up this episode, Rahul, the women are playing an FA Cup semifinal as well.
Yes, they're back and they're playing against Arsenal. So it's the top two in the WSL that take on each other in the FA Cup semifinal. And this is going to be our fourth meeting with them. We've played them twice in the league and once, if you remember, in the FA Cup final from last season, which took place in December and Chelsea won 3-1. So, sorry, 3-0. So it should be a fun game and it should be a tactical game because in a way it's the top two teams trying to win another trophy. And for Chelsea, they've been in good form. They scored 15 goals before the international break, beating Aston Villa, Leicester and Birmingham City. And they'll come into this game full of confidence, obviously based on the final that they won in December and hope to make another final and continue the charge towards winning hopefully two trophies this season. But that wraps it up, guys. Thank you very much for listening. Please continue to subscribe, like, and follow us. It's at the Premier Chels, Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Instagram. And then Twitter, it's at Premier Chels. And if you haven't tuned into the last episode, episode 109, and check out our conversation with Christina Uncle, the former FIFA referee. And as always, send us your feedback, and we will be back with a new episode. But until then, stay safe and up the Chelsea.